All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast.
This is episode 23.
No, that was like the, is that Who Wants to be a Millionaire? Is that what that was? I don't know. Anyway, hi everybody, we are here. We are super excited to be with you once more. I am your friendly neighborhood podcast host, Andrew.
And I am Money Charlie host.
She's not a friendly neighborhood podcast host, though.
I'm not friendly. Not at all.
Okay, maybe a little bit.
All right, maybe a little bit.
This episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is powered by Indian food. It was delicious. Anyway, so we've been, you know, playing it. I have been playing a lot of video games this week.
You have. I think it's in part because you're trying to clear some stuff out before we have to unhook everything and move it.
That's true. That's true. So, I played a bunch of stuff. One of them is a game that we picked up at PAX called Pollen.
Yes.
This is an interesting game. So
at the time you said it sounded like it looked really cool, really fun.
Well, yeah. I mean, so this is an environmental game, a lot like Tacoma or Gone Home, which is a game where it's a first person. It's not really a shooter because there's really no shooting, but you're traveling around and it's a first person exploration game.
First person exploration game, of which the prototype is Myst.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's fair. And so you're at the space station and something has gone horribly wrong and you're wandering around trying to figure everything out. I had a lot of really high hopes for this game, and I think that the undercurrent of my opinion is probably coming out a little bit. It gets really weird, and unless I'm missing something, there's pretty much no closure in the game at all. So I was a little disappointed, actually. I was kind of a bummer.
That's too bad.
Yep. So that's that. On the flip side, a game that I really, really, really enjoyed a lot and is suitable for the kids was Ratchet and Clank.
Ratchet and Clank, which you also finished this week.
Which I also finished this week. That game is so good. So this is, for any parents out there who played Ratchet and Clank, the old school Ratchet and Clank on the PlayStation 2, and I think we've talked about it on the show, but humor me for a moment, my dear.
Yes, we have, the last 2 weeks, in fact.
Well, you want to know why? Because it's pretty
because
good.
Because it's good, and you can play it with the kids.
With the kids, and the kids can play it.
Anyway. Yeah, and the kids can play it, too.
So they took Ratchet and Clank 1, remade it into a movie, and then remade the movie into a game.
Yes.
So it's basically the first game, but it's completely rebuilt from the bottom up instead of it just being some kind of like HD
remaster. It's not just a
remaster like that, right? And it's so good. It almost makes me sad that I didn't play all the other Ratchet and Clank games, because I actually hadn't even played the first one before I played this one.
Yeah, well, maybe we could start.
Yeah, but I don't have a PlayStation 2.
Fair enough.
So I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully, maybe they'll do some, even if they did HD up-reses or something like that, if the platforming is that good. Yeah. But anyway, so I finished that as well. And then last night, I picked up what might be the most beautiful game I've ever played, which is The Order 1886.
Yeah, you finally delved back into that. Yeah. That is definitely not kid-appropriate.
Not a kid-appropriate game. This is a game for basically sort of the hardcore adults who like shooters and every single possible awesome trope. It's the Knights of the Round Table in steampunk London with werewolves and vampires.
Yeah, I thought that's what I remembered from it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, and it plays like Gears of War, so it's a third-person cover-based shooter with some puzzles and stuff like that. But the game is mind-blowingly beautiful. It's on PlayStation 4. It's
beautiful is not the word I would look for it, but when I came out and you were playing it last night, until I really paid attention, I thought you were watching something on TV with headphones on.
It's incredible.
It is very realistically animated. Oh, exceedingly so.
So that's what I've been doing from a video game perspective this week, which admittedly is not particularly kid friendly, but
that's right.
Sometimes you need to not be around your kids.
Well, and you know, some of our listeners have older children for whom The Order 1886 might not be too inappropriate.
Too horrible. But we did actually, play some games with our kids.
We did. We played Letter Tycoon.
Yep.
mostly with other people's kids, actually, because our kids aren't real big on making words with letters yet.
Right. Yeah. So we talked about Letter Tycoon last week, and we kind of we have talked about rule shifting on the show before. And yeah. So any game like this, this is a game that's almost like Bananagrams with cards. We kind of we described, loosely. A game like that is not going to lend itself very well to multi-generational gaming because people have wide varieties of vocabularies, and it makes it immediately an unfair game if you're playing with a kid versus an adult. But we kind of did some work with some friends, and we discussed some ways that the rules could be maybe modified a little bit to make it possible for an adult to play with kids. And,
our friend tried a couple of different variations and came upon one that seemed to work very well.
Right. So, she was able to play with her 9-year-old and 7-year-old? Nine and 8-year-old. And with those variations, it seemed like it was getting to be pretty close to fair. So, that was certainly exciting for us, to see those kinds of rule shifting mechanics in play in such a way that a game that really does not lend itself well to, it's not like a game where somebody just lags behind a little bit. I mean, you could wreck somebody in this game if you're not on equal footing. And so it was really cool to see a game like this that could stand up to that with a little bit of rule shifting.
Yeah. And I have to admit, it's always particularly hard to do with word-based and spelling-based games, because that's something where the older you are, the more natural advantage you're going to have.
Right.
And it's not like a strategy game where it kind of scales a little bit better. It's out there black and white. So, our friend's change that she said worked the best and made it the most fair was actually, she started by trying to bump up the payout for her kids.
Right. They ended up running out of money.
Yeah. And it still didn't feel balanced and fair. So the best solution she found was actually, instead of bumping up the kids' payout, was to bump down the adult payout rewards.
Right.
So that, I thought that was pretty cool. I definitely would not have thought of that as an option until working through a couple of other ones.
Right. Yeah. And we even played with some things like, so in the game, for those who don't remember, there's money, which you get by building words, and then you can turn around and spend the money on things like patents. Mm-hmm. But there's also stock, right, which is like money that you can't spend.
Yes.
And so we actually kind of, when we're talking about how we could move some of these rules around, usually the way it works is you kind of hit a money threshold and then you start getting money and stock. Mm-hmm. We flipped it around the other side to say, okay, for the shorter words, the adults don't get money, but they do get stock. So there's still some points involved, but they're not able to kind of get that foothold to start to buy the patents.
Use it as leverage.
To get further ahead. So that proved to be something that actually worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
So, but we actually played another game that we got in for review that is literally hitting Kickstarter today.
Wow.
And that game
is The Princess and the Goblin, based on the classic fairy tale by George MacDonald.
Mm-hmm. So The Princess and the Goblin is a really cute game where essentially what you're doing is you're kind of exploring the caves around where you're trapped. Mm-hmm. And then once you decide to make a break for it, you are trying to travel through the caves to get to your home.
Yeah. What you're doing is starting by splitting this pile of face down cards into almost like a memory grid.
Mm-hmm.
And then in later turns, when you're making your escape, you are trying to go through that memory grid and build a workable path.
Right.
That is for your own personal use and cannot be shared with anyone.
Right. And the way the path works is that each side of the path has a flag, which could be the same symbol or it could be different symbols.
Yeah.
And so what you're essentially trying to do is connect the flag so that whatever you have on the right side of your existing path matches the left flag of something you flip over.
Yeah, it's an input-output match.
Exactly. So it's not like you have to remember exact certain things as you go along. I think that we played it a few times, and our 5-year-old was getting super frustrated.
He was super frustrated.
He was getting really frustrated. I think that we'll need to play it a little bit more to get a little bit more familiarity.
Yeah,
with the kind of the game, and it's not that the mechanics are complicated, but like especially for a younger younger
They're more complicated
kid.
Than the mechanics of the games our kids usually play and are good
right.
at.
It's a little bit more abstract yeah. in what you're trying to maintain a lot of variables in your head.
Yeah. Well, and it's that combination, which I think is great. I don't see this in a game very often. It's a combination of straight up memory
mm-hmm.
And strategy.
Right.
Because there's all these sorts of rules about when you can peek at the cards that have been memorized. And the strategy also comes in with building your path, because certain squares of your path are going to be worth a lot more points. And the longer your path is, the more points it's likely to be. But there are certain cards, if you draw them, you immediately lose.
Right, which is a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
That actually might be a good rule shifting mechanic.
Is to get rid of
them, or you get two shots, or yeah, you get three shots, like or something that. Like that.
The other mechanic I thought was interesting is once the first person in your group fails at building a path,
or gets out.
Sorry, whether they win or lose, once the first person is knocked out of the game, one way or another, they get to help with increasing the pace for everybody else. So mm-hmm. everybody gets a chance to try to build their path and get out. And the first one out gets to stay involved.
Right. Which is good. I mean,
it's good for a family.
It's interesting in a game like this where there's a definitive end point, right? In the sense that if you draw a goblin card, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit like a Euro in the sense that, like a Euro, one of the defining factors of a Euro is you play until the game is over.
Yeah.
You don't get knocked out and then you have to sit and wait. So it's an interesting mechanic to keep those other people involved, which is especially important for a game that really is focused to kids.
Yeah.
Because the last thing you want to do is be like, sorry, Mr. 5-year-old, but you're going to have to sit there and watch everybody else play a game for the next 5 minutes. I mean, that's, that literally could be considered cruel and unusual punishment.
He certainly seemed to act as if it was so, even though he was still involved.
Yeah, he had a really tough time with that. I was actually surprised at how upset he got.
Well, I think it's because he's actually usually really, really good at memory games, and he just seemed to be a little off on that.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the goblin cards, which are the automatic you lose, whether those were getting shifted around a little bit when he wasn't paying attention or what, I don't know. But
right. But fun game. I definitely want to play it a little bit more. I think we will end up, we'll have a write-up on the Princess and the Goblin, including a link to the Kickstarter. We'll at least put the link to the Kickstarter in the show notes for this episode. So
yes.
So that will get out there as well. So let me think. So we were driving down the highway today mm-hmm. on our way to dinner, and we saw a billboard.
Yes.
And it had something really funny on it, and well, it wasn't funny. It was interesting.
It was game-related.
Game-related, and we thought that we would make that and its associated information our topic for the night.
After the break.
So, yeah. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about something big. We're back.
So we are going to talk about something big.
Something very big, like hundreds of feet probably big.
Yeah. Andrew.
Anitra.
What do you think about the esports phenomenon?
Well, I don't really understand it. I think it's very much a generational thing.
We're too old.
We are too old. Like, I watch baseball. I mean, when I you know, can, and I watch football and I enjoy that, but for some reason esports just doesn't really do it for me, especially because these days the big esports are MOBAs, like League of Legends and stuff like that, and I'm just not interested in those whatsoever.
I do remember some now, but more back in the day, I did used to spend quite a bit of time watching other people play video games,
mm-hmm.
so I can get some of the appeal there.
Okay.
But what about playing esports? Being involved in a big tournament, in some sort of social context where you can see the people you're competing against.
Well, I mean, I did, you know, before Super Smash Bros. Brawl came out, there was a big tournament at WPL, a pre-release tournament. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I do remember.
And I waited in line for 2 hours to get kicked out in the first round. That was pretty awesome.
But you still enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, I was there with some of my friends, and we had a good time. Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is all leading up to what we saw. What we saw on the highway was a billboard that said, "Play Minecraft on the big screen." So I was curious, and I went and I looked up some more information about it.
Mm-hmm.
The group, the company that puts these things on, calls itself Super League.
Super League, it sounds like...
Super League Gaming.
Isn't there like Super Mutant League? Isn't that a game or something like that? I think it is. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, and they have to call themselves Super League Gaming to distinguish themselves from a rugby league.
Okay.
That is also called Super League.
Well, so, I mean, most of the esports stuff now is, what, Major League Gaming? Is that the... I think that's the official esports, professional esports people.
So Super League is trying to pitch itself as sort of a little league of esports.
Or minor leagues.
Or a minor league of esports.
Okay, sure, sure. Because there's still money to be made out there, even if it's not, you know, the millions of dollars.
Presumably.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's got to be.
They do Minecraft because it's open source, so they don't have to pay any royalties.
Okay, makes sense.
They do it in movie theaters so that you can have a whole bunch of people in the same room playing on the big screen.
Sure.
So every person, it's mostly kids. It says most of their participants are between 6 and 18.
That's pretty cool, though. I like that.
They've had some younger and some older.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody, you know, they pay their entrance fee. They bring their own laptop. You hook up to the Super League Wi-Fi. And you start playing a custom Minecraft scenario.
Okay.
In teams. So you're looking at your normal Minecraft display.
Uh-huh.
You know, heads-up display on your laptop. But then they also have a custom, basically custom programmed mod that lets them show the entire play area on the movie theater screen.
Oh, cool. So you can be watching sort of everybody moving around.
Exactly.
Neat. I like it.
So it seems like a really neat idea. It sounds like it's just getting off the ground. They're doing a bunch of different leagues around the country. League play around the country this summer.
Okay. So it really is super new.
It's brand new.
Huh. Interesting. So, I mean, how do you feel as a parent? So you asked me how I felt as just a person with esports. How do you feel as a parent? So we have a 7-year-old.
Yes.
This is 6 to 18.
Yes.
Minecraft is a game that I think we all know you can just dump hundreds of hours into it, because it's a game that's not a game that is a game.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that, like, I still don't know a whole lot about Minecraft, but it sounds like what they have set up here is a specific goal-oriented scenario.
Right, but...
So it's not like build your world.
Yeah, but it's not like these kids are going in there and they've never played Minecraft before.
Right. I'm sure these are kids who have played plenty of Minecraft already.
So I mean, I just... As we have this discussion, I mean, we have to, it would be disingenuous of us to not point out that we've had conversations about screen time and limiting screen time before.
Yes.
Minecraft doesn't really lend itself well to a game that lives in an environment where there's limited screen time.
Well, I mean, you say that, but the folks I know whose young children play Minecraft, I'm talking under age 10. Still have limits on their screen time. That just happens to be the screen time that their kids pick the most often.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing most of them probably either set timers or are sitting right there with mom or dad.
Okay.
As supervising.
Mm-hmm.
You can still get good at Minecraft playing it for an hour a day if you play it for an hour a day.
Seven days a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe.
Maybe not as good as everybody else, but good enough.
Well, and I guess that's kind of like where my question is going. So, you know, I know that the fundamental premise of things like Little League is that you're doing it to have fun, right? But there's a desire to win.
Sure.
It exists. I want my kids to win if they're going to do stuff. And so, if I'm in a situation like this where I know that my kid has substantially less time invested in something, I mean, unless my child is a savant, then I know going into it that it's going to be a frustrating situation.
Well, it depends on the kid. I mean, in reading a few different articles about this, there was one parent quoted who brought their three-year-old to play Minecraft on the big screen.
Okay.
At an age like that, it's obviously a kid who already enjoys Minecraft, but probably doesn't care too much about whether they or their team win or lose. It's just so cool to be there with a whole bunch of people having a lot of energy for the game, and just win or lose, it's a different and much more social experience.
Okay.
Around video gaming.
Sure.
I would say our 7-year-old, if she was really into Minecraft, I probably wouldn't want to do this. Because she, at the things that she thinks she's good at, she is super competitive.
Sure.
And while it is good for her sometimes to be thrown into the fire to kind of realize you're not as good as you think you are.
We say that as frustrated parents.
We try to pick those circumstances carefully,
right,
when we have the option.
Right.
There are other kids, I'm sure, even with limited screen time, would love this, would jump at a chance for this. Something else was pointed out in these articles was, like it or not, your preteen and young teen kids,
mm-hmm,
are gaming online. Unless you have seriously locked things down.
Sure.
Minecraft is good for that, in that it's not just shoot people all the time.
Right. I mean, I guess I feel like the 12 to 18 range, I feel like this is a home run.
Sure.
That seems to be the age range where it's like, look, you can do this thing that doesn't involve, you know, hanging out with a bunch of punks and doing a bunch of punk stuff or whatever. I don't know. Now I really do sound like a crotchety old man. But
get off my lawn.
Right? No. But I mean, it really does seem like the target age range for something like this. I think that my kids in that age range, I'm like, you are doing this. This is what the kind of stuff you need to be doing.
I would agree, but I like the fact that the organizers of this league decided not to limit the ages.
Let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
You looked the thing up?
Yeah.
How much is it?
It is $20 a session, and for quote-unquote league play, it is 6 sessions. So once a week for 6 weeks, $120.
Okay, interesting. And is there
they get a t-shirt.
Is there like a spectator thing? Can you do you have to?
I think you can come in for free as a spectator, but that was unclear.
Interesting. Okay. Maybe we'll show up, or I'll show up, or you'll show up, or something, and we'll check it out. It'll be an interesting learning experience for us, I think.
Ah. Parents do not need to purchase a ticket to attend events. Parents can purchase tickets and assign them to players from their own accounts, which may be preferable with parents who have multiple children.
I see.
So, I like this. Something else they pointed out here is, again, this is an excellent avenue for those, like you were saying, the tweens, teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these articles I read said that these 4 or 5 teenage guys who have been playing Minecraft together online for years at this point,
sure,
made a point of asking their parents if they could all go to the same event to play this together.
Aww. And
actually meet each other.
Sure, that's awesome.
So that was cute. I mean,
the other thing, and you know, if anybody listens to this that is in any shape or stripe a professional gamer, I don't mean to minimize your skill set when I say this, but I could never be a professional basketball player because I'm like,
for so many reasons.
Hey, easy. Because I'm like 5'7".
Yes.
I mean, maybe I guess if I was a really good 3-point shooter or something like that.
No.
But what do you mean? No. Muggsy Bogues was 5'6".
And when did he play basketball?
I don't know, 20 years ago?
All right. I will say that I have a friend who could not even get in onto his community college basketball team because he was an inch below their requirements.
Yeah, well, that's rubbish. Anyway, my point here is that their physical talents, I mean, there's a lot of training that goes into it, but sometimes you just need to have God-given physical talents to do certain things.
Sure.
Right. This is playing a video game.
Yes.
This is something that I think is a lot more training and a lot less physical talents.
Yes and no.
See, this is what I'm saying. I don't want to minimize anybody's special gaming, you know, well, whatever, savantness.
Okay. Let me put it this way. There was a period of time in my life that I played, this was way back in the day, I played Quake 3 against the same group of people on a regular basis. I got a lot of practice and a lot of training and help from them. I went from absolutely horrendous, like jump off a cliff type of play,
sure,
to I could stay alive and maybe get off a lucky shot to kill somebody once in a while. My brain just doesn't work well for first person shooters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is still a certain skill. It's just not a muscle skill. It's a hand-eye coordination, spatial awareness kind of skill.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I just think that, you know, there's a lot of disenfranchised nerds out there that wish they could do something and be an awesome spectacle. And this is an opportunity for that to happen.
Yeah.
That's really all I'm saying.
Sure. You know what? I want my kids to be able to be involved in something that feels like an awesome spectacle.
Mm-hmm. That's why they're going to be rocket scientists.
Well, I was going to say, that's why I'm hoping that at least one or two of them will join a choir and stick with it, because that a concert can feel like an awesome spectacle.
Usually that involves an electric guitar.
Or a really large choir.
Or a really large choir.
I've sung in a really large choir once or twice. It was awesome.
All right. Well, anyway, so you should check it out. What's the website?
The website is superleague.com.
No hyphens, no whatever.
No nothing.
Wow. Nice domain grab, guys.
Yeah.
Good job. All right, so check out superleague.com. I do think that if I can work it into the schedule, either I or you will try to make it out to one of these things and talk to one of the organizers. That'd be kind of a cool thing to get some information about. So we are going to do that.
All right. Sounds good.
And that's actually it for us this week. We do not have a lot of extra stuff going on because we are moving in 2 weeks.
Super soon. So much packing.
Much packing.
Packing boxes, the game.
Yeah, right. In the meantime, you can definitely check us out on the interwebs at thefamilygamers.com.
Or on Facebook, facebook.com/familygamersAA.
Or Twitter, twitter.com/familygamersAA.
You can also email us. You can find me at anitra@thefamilygamers.com. Or you can find Andrew.
Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
We're so original.
Oh, yeah. I know, right? So you can go to thefamilygamers.com and there's a bunch of links on the right side to all the different ways that you can subscribe to our podcast.
You know how else you can find us?
On iTunes.
You can!
iTunes is the place to go to subscribe to us, assuming, of course, that you have an Apple device. Because
even if you don't have an Apple device,
you can still download iTunes.
You should still go to iTunes and rate our podcast.
Yes, leave us a review. We definitely would love to have more reviews on iTunes, because that is how we get pushed up in the new and noteworthy section of the podcast store. I know I say it like that because it's goofy, but seriously, it actually is.
Goofy is not the word I was going to use.
Thanks, darling. It is depressingly important.
It's so important, and we know that we sound dumb every week begging for reviews, but that's not going
to
stop.
Right, pretty much. If you wanted to stop, leave more reviews.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, that's going to be it for us this week. We are looking forward to coming back at you next week. And until then, play games with your kids.